Welcome, friends. Welcome back. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. Today is the 27th of January, 2015, and today we're joined on the line once again by our old friend Anthony Gucciardi, who I'm sure most of you will probably best know for his work talking about health and nutrition at NaturalSociety.com. And on that note, I will direct everyone's attention to a very good video that was recently posted up on Natural Society highlighting Koreans' reactions to American snack foods that they're trying for the first time, which is quite humorous from my perspective here in Japan, and seeing a lot of the same reactions to when people see some of the things that we eat in Canada. It is humorous to see those reactions, and that's not what we're going to be talking about today, but it does kind of relate. It's the idea of normalizing what should not be normal and denormalizing things that should be normal, and I think there's a lot to bite off and chew in that regard. Let's bring him into the conversation. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on the program again.
James, thanks again for having me on. It's fun to think about. It was almost, I guess, 2-3 years ago was the last time we spoke live. And I think we were talking about Fukushima or something like that, which is still a very real scenario, which is depressing. But on a lighter note, on that Korean video, my favorite quote is when one of the girls, she's laughing and she said, "This tastes good, but it tastes like something that's going to kill you." And I think that's pretty much my opinion on a lot of the junk food and the food supply as well. It tastes good, but it's something that's likely going to kill you.
It's so true. I mean, it's so cutting. And that's it in a nutshell. And unfortunately, for so many people, they just get so, again, they normalize that. So to the extent that, of course, I mean, yes, we eat this kind of stuff. And this is what we consider the good food that we'll allow ourselves as an indulgence, or maybe we'll just pig out on. And it's supposed to be a good thing, even though it's obviously horrible for us. And yet there are entire societies elsewhere around the globe where that's really weird and people don't eat like that. So it is important to have that outside perspective from time to time. And speaking of outside perspectives, I want to commend especially to the listener and viewer's attention a couple of articles from Natural Society that came out towards the end of last year and the beginning of this year that I think was really important in helping me to crystallize some of the thoughts I've been having recently. The first one is 4 ways to actually make your New Year's resolution work, which is, perhaps we're addressing this a little bit too late, but I think better late than never. And it's important to understand that when we set goals for ourselves, there are certain ways that our own psyche tries to undermine our plans, and is usually quite good at doing so, so that ultimately we start to shed those new habits that we try to adopt, and we eventually go back to whatever the status quo was. But this article points to some ways that we can overcome that psychological trickery that our mind plays on us. Anthony, could you just run through some of these ideas and what prompted you to write this article?
Always remember that your subconscious, your brain, is so powerful that it can be your biggest ally or it can be your biggest enemy, literally. It can sabotage your goals. So it goes beyond New Year's resolutions, which, by the way, I think are a good thing. I just think we should be making resolutions every day. But there's a reason 88% of New Year's resolutions fail, right? And I believe that it's because people violate these 4 rules, and it's essential for every goal. If you violate one of these rules, I believe that your statistical ability to substantiate the goal falls to almost 0%. And it's not because we're stupid or something along the lines of you're just not thinking positive enough. It's literally thinking of psychology and how your subconscious works, such as number 1, which I think is the most important thing, it's been shown in studies time and time again, is don't tell anyone about your big plans. So the number 1 thing that most people do when they make a goal or a New Year's resolution, like, I'm going to lose 50 pounds, right? What do? They don't go and research how to lose 50 pounds. They call up their wife, or they look to their wife or their best friend or their coworker, and they say, I'm going to lose 50 pounds. And every single time you do that, there is a hormonal release in your brain as if you've already done it. So you're telling your coworker over there, Joe Schmo, I'm going to lose 50 pounds. You go home to your wife, I'm going to lose 50 pounds. Your kids, your family, your mother, whatever. You're saying it over and over again. You already did it in your mind. Your mind already thinks you lost 50 pounds. That's why over 75% of people go out and buy self-help books and don't read them and feel like they've already helped themselves. Because once they get that book on their bookshelf, they're happy. The serotonin, the dopamine, all of it's been released, and they feel that consequential, I'm amazing, I already completed my goal. And that's the number 1 step that everyone violates, and that's the number 1 reason that people aren't achieving their goals, aren't building their businesses, aren't reaching, you know, more people, spreading the word, whatever it is. That, in my opinion, is the number one, and we can, of course, get into the other ones. But isn't it amazing how powerful our brains are to sabotage ourselves, even when we're trying to consciously do our goals?
It is incredible, and in fact, that's the reason why my New Year's resolution is to become a self-help author, because apparently that's where the money is. No, I'm just kidding, of course. But no, this is so important, and it really made me think about previous years in which I've set goals for myself and haven't followed through. And it is, I mean, it is so true. When you go around telling people, "Oh, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this," you might think, "Oh, I'm telling people, therefore there will be the social pressure to follow through on it, so it's a good thing." But no, I think you're right. It in your mind, you kind of convince yourself that you've already done it simply by telling other people you're going to do it. So this year, interestingly, I did a subscriber-only video where I was talking about goals that I've set for the Corbett Report this year, but I did not reveal those goals yet. Instead, I've held that off till December, and we're going to do a checklist and see what I've managed to follow through on. On a personal note, however, I don't mind telling the audience out there that I did take up jogging, because I really haven't been physically fit enough over the last few years. So I did take up jogging. And I think that knowing that only 8% of people actually follow through with New Year's plan is probably the best motivation that I can possibly have, because of course I'm part of the 8%. I'm not one of those 92% schmoes. I can do this. So in some ways, I think we can also, as you say, use our psychology to help achieve those goals rather than to trick us into not achieving them.
Actually, we can. And that's why number two is don't underestimate your body. And now everyone thinks that means, if they hear it at a glance, it's like a headline. They think that means, yeah, push yourself harder, work out harder, you can do it, push it to the limit like Rocky. Well, it's actually the opposite. Your body is so powerful that it's like a mountain. And when you try to scrape away and push a mountain, what does it do? It stands as strong and tall as physically possible. It's just the only thing it knows how to do. It's not consciously saying, I'm a mountain, you can't move me. It just is immovable. It's an immovable object. Your body achieves homeostasis and its temperature and everything like that. It also achieves homeostasis in doing what it knows how to do. So if that means a stress reliever is eating sugar every night, or a stress reliever is consuming alcohol every single night, well, your body wants that, because it's so used to it and so rigid in its ways. There's actually things in Ayurveda that talk about a rigid body, that talk about a rigid spine, everything. Your body, rigidification is actually a word, and your body experiences rigidification every single time you program it to achieve a certain response from something. So I always tell people, you know, so many emails around this time of year, okay, I'm going to quit smoking. Number one, you just told me your goal, but yes, I'll help you. And they say, what do I do? I want to go cold turkey because I'm so strong and I can handle it, and I'm going to quit alcohol and I can get rid of sugar in my entire life and all this stuff. And I say, well, that's actually the wrong way to do it. You should actually smoke a little bit less every day. And they say, well, you're a natural health person. What are you talking about? And I say, well, you smoke a little bit less, but then you insert protocols for detoxing. So you go in and actually detox your liver, detox your body, start weaning off the alcohol, start replacing sugar with fruit that has fiber to help you digest all of this, so you can slowly and steadily take your body away from all this. Because, and I hate to say it, I'd love to come on here and say, just stop smoking and do a detox and you'll be better forever. But I'm telling you, every single person that has ever done that, in my experience, even under the care of the best natural doctors in the world, with ozone and everything, they quit smoking completely. And then a month later, they binge smoke and they gain 20 pounds. You have to let your body start slightly moving. If you push your body in the wrong direction, it's going to push back twice as hard. So don't underestimate your body. It's going to be a challenge, but you can do it if you think consciously and decide that you're going to slowly adapt the body and evolve to the situation as opposed to force something. Just like you wouldn't want to get cancer overnight for no reason, you can't lose 50 pounds overnight. It's a good thing. Be appreciative of your body.
That is extremely important. And I think that what you've said also ties in with point three, make your resolution natural, not stressful, because I truly do believe that it is a question of not doing something that you don't want to do. You have to genuinely desire the thing that you are setting as a goal. And I guess that sounds a bit of a tautology. If it's your goal, then obviously you desire it, but not necessarily. If it's a chore, it's such a horrible thing that you have to give up whatever, smoking or whatever it is, then yes, you are going to be in that mind frame where you constantly desire that thing, and that's going to be, oh, I'll allow myself a little reward for whatever, because I went a week without a cigarette. And if it becomes that, then it will inevitably become the status quo again. You have to actually desire the thing that you are trying to achieve, which in the case, whatever, stopping smoking, is to not smoke. And again, that's kind of a psychological trick, I want to say, but it is so important to understand that what we're trying to do is not to just change the things that we're doing, but to change the habits that underlie them, to change the desires that drive those habits. And that's a much harder thing to do in one way, but actually easier if you simply consciously externalize that.
Well, I think it's important to distinguish the difference between a change and a goal, right? So what is a goal? My goal is to lose 20 pounds. And by the way, talking about don't underestimate your body, you know, I've actually gained weight in the past too and had to go ahead and initiate cleanse protocols because I was working so much, sitting here for 12 hours a day, that I started gaining weight. And you're thinking, how's that possible? And I'm thinking, how's that possible? Because I'm eating, you know, a raw 100% superfood based diet and I'm gaining weight. It's because your body will adapt to things. If you're pumping it with sugar out every now and then, it'll happen. But anyway, a change versus a goal is a very important distinguishing factor to understand. A goal is I'm going to lose 50 pounds. Then what? Gee, I lost 50 pounds. I can eat sugar again and eat crap again. No, you don't want to have a goal. You want to change. A goal is I'm going to lose 50 pounds. Change is I'm going to lose weight. I'm going to be healthy, in a state of health. I'm going to adapt my body to be where I want to be consistently. So with a goal, you measure it daily. And you count the hours basically until you get there. Like, I'm going to stop smoking. Okay, it's been 3 days since I smoked a cigarette. Whew, man, if I could just make it 2 weeks. A change is I'm not smoking anymore. You know, you don't count the days. It's not a matter of if I'm going to go back. A change is to change your direction as opposed to take a different way, ultimately getting back to that road with a goal. You don't want to even set – you want mini goals like, yeah, you know, if I could do 2 weeks, that'll be good. If I could do 4 weeks, that'll be good. But you don't want to say, I just want to go 2 weeks without smoking, because then once you hit that goal, again, the hormones come out in your brain, the chemicals release. You feel like you did it, and then you're done, and you have no motivation to continue. So a change versus a goal is a very important distinction as well in my mind.
It really is, and again, it can be so powerful, and I can attest to that. I've made numerous changes in my life, and they have all come from actually desiring that change rather than just setting a goal, so I think that is important. And then the final fourth point in this article is to get rid of certain foods, which may or may not pertain directly to someone's goal. I mean, if someone sets a New Year's resolution of losing weight, maybe that directly pertains, but perhaps not. And yet, of course, what you are what you eat in so many different ways, and there are so many of these foods that really are truly poisoning us and truly affecting every one of our systems, including our ability to think clearly. What are the foods that we need to avoid in that respect?
So I personally think that avoiding these foods will, no matter what your goal is, as long as you're a human being existing on planet Earth, I believe that if you are eating foods like high fructose corn syrup, which has been found to contain toxic mercury, which is considered one of the most toxic substances we've ever found in the world. It contains that. It also, Princeton found, is making you fat and stupid. It's reducing your IQ. It's making you fatter than if you were eating sugar, and it's messing with your brain. It's giving you brain fog. Everyone I talk to, and I say the simplest thing to do is get rid of high fructose corn syrup in your diet. It's actually pretty easy. I know it used to be and everything, but these days actually corporations are phasing it out. And when they realize that they're not eating high fructose corn syrup anymore, this is what they say to me every single time. It's like I can think clearly again. That's the exact words that they say over and over and over again. So if you're eating high fructose corn syrup, and you might actually not know if you are, it's in your ketchup or anything like that or in restaurants, get rid of it and you will think clearly again. That's the same words every single time. Or one girl told me, I'm human again. I was a zombie for 3 years. So that's the difference. And then there's other things too you can get out of your diet, like artificial flavorings or aspartame, which is the super safe FDA approved, just an amino acid. Oh, wait a minute. It's actually created from bacteria waste that's genetically modified by Monsanto. And that came out from The Independent in 1991. So you're eating bacteria, genetically modified bacteria waste. You're pumping yourself full of mercury. You're eating genetically modified organisms, which even if you think GMOs are safe, Monsanto's Roundup is not safe and damages DNA and gives you cancer and destroys your kidneys. And then, of course, sugar. They say 16 grams a day. How many do you eat? I oftentimes eat a lot more than 16 grams myself. And if you get out of sugar brain, it's a real thing. Look up sugar brain. If you get off sugar brain, you'll also be thinking a lot more clearly. So if your goal is to build your business, or your goal is to make more money overall, or help people, or go out and lose weight, no matter what it is, I honestly think if you eliminate high fructose corn syrup, GMOs, artificial sweeteners, sugar, and the medley of other items, but those main ones, you will be able to achieve it, much more statistically probable.
But Anthony, I mean, Donald Rumsfeld helped to approve aspartame. It must be safe.
We're bad, James. This is bad. You know what? In fact, I feel like it's a little bit racist to not eat high fructose corn syrup.
It must be. Absolutely. If you're against that, then you're against puppy dogs and sunshine and rainbows. So
exactly. The corporations say it's perfectly safe.
Right. Well, I prefaced all of this by saying we're a bit late in talking about New Year's resolutions, but that's another important point of this as well. We have this idea that there's a certain time of year in which we make resolutions to change and affect that change in our lives, which of course is utterly arbitrary and just another one of those psychological excuses for not actually changing. So there is never a bad time to start these changes.
Yeah, I mean, you could decide today, hey, I'm going to phase out these foods. I'm actually going to lose the weight. You can do whatever. If you decide right now that you want to change the world in one way today, multiply that by 365, not just once a year making a resolution. Change today that you're going to share something like this video or share the corporate report with your friends and family. You're going to make an influence in 365 days that's 365 times greater than you ever did with your New Year's resolutions that you don't usually keep. So you see how easy it is? I mean, I know you know this, James. I mean, look what you're doing. But could you imagine if we just decided for 15 minutes a day as a change that we're going to help the world in some way, spread the word in some way? If everyone listening did that right now, could you imagine what would happen?
From tiny seeds, great mighty oak trees can come. From tiny acorns, mighty oak trees can come. And I think that's exactly right. Just tiny changes in habits can have huge effects over time. And that's something that I can attest to from various times when I've done that in my life. And something that I hope we will be able to accomplish throughout the year on the Corbett Report. As I have mentioned several times now, I'm looking more towards steering the Corbett Report towards the solution-based approach of what can we actually do.
I mean, millions upon millions of views on YouTube. You know, you were successful back when we spoke numerous years ago, but even now you're bigger and bigger. And I was actually on YouTube the other day and I discovered some of your stuff when I wasn't even looking for health related or anything. It was totally off topic. There you were. You know, I mean, just you spending time every day doing this is affecting millions of people. And the average person can do the same thing. It's very inspiring to me. It fills me up with passion when I think about all the great work that everyone's doing out there and all the thousands of people that are sharing. Just sharing on something on Facebook makes it a big difference. But hats off to you. Good job.
Well, thank you for that. And I think that's a testament to all of the people out there helping to spread this work as well.
Oh, absolutely,
but I think it's a process of directing that energy now, because we do have an incredible and growing amount of energy that has been accrued over years of people turning away from the mainstream programming and tuning into the alternative media. That's excellent. Now let's start using some of that power in a directed method to actually achieve the ends that we want, because we can just sit there and react to things that are happening, or we can take the bull by the horns and actually start to make positive changes in the world outside, not just in the world in our own head. So on that note, I want to turn to the other article that I want to discuss, which I think is extremely important. You posted towards the end of last year, again on naturalsociety.com, Anthony Gucciardi donates 20,000 meals to U.S. food banks. And I want to take a moment to highlight this work, not just because of the work that this particular thing that you've done, which I think is important, but also what it signifies in terms of what the audience can start to do and take away from this. So tell us a little bit about what you actually did last year.
Yes. So about once a year, I will broadcast one of the initiatives that I take. So for example, the year before that, we went ahead and gave about, you know, several thousand dollars to what's known as a street team in Washington. And it was these individuals that were cited by the government and arrested for handing out food to homeless people on Thanksgiving. Okay, so the government actually was going to lock them up, and they're still in court battles with the government to this day. So we gave them some money and told them to go out and buy some turkeys and just unload on the streets to these homeless people. And we're not talking about beggars that are on the side of the road that are addicted to drugs. We're talking about literal, dirt poor, unfortunately, homeless people that can't even eat with families and kids. And up in Washington, I guess there's not that great of a shelter area in Olympia. But anyway, this year I decided to go ahead and do a release – encouraging everyone, because of this amazing opportunity for an organization called Feeding America. They actually run the U.S. food banks, and they determine which ones actually need it the most. They were matching all donations. So we went ahead and donated 20,000 meals across the United States. And from that, obviously, it would feed 40,000. It would offer 40,000 meals to families. And we are encouraging everyone to go ahead and join me in doing this. And the reason that I think it's important to highlight some giving, and obviously, you know, we're doing other initiatives behind the scenes because it's you don't want to think, look how great I am. I'm doing it because I want to encourage everyone to remember it. Because sometimes all it takes is to say, hey, look at this and look what we're doing and look how this makes me happy to help people. And then everyone around listening can say, hey, that actually resonates with me as well. I want to give to that. And I happen to know from speaking to Feeding America, which were great, by the way, in helping me make sure that the allocation of the meals were going to the right places. They have a very good rating on Charity Navigator. They told me just from that article in a press release that I did that got picked up by 200 news sources through a press release organization that they got about another 100 plus thousand meals. So think about that for a minute. Just a release of something like that encouraged readers, which is amazing to me, and I'm sure we'll encourage more right now, to give over 100,000 extra meals to my 20,000. That's going to feed over 100,000 people that literally cannot afford food. And I know to think about that to some people, they say, oh, they could buy a bag of chips. No, no, we're talking about people that literally cannot buy food, if you think about that for a minute. And it's, I believe, a moral duty to, when you have wealth and when you have succeeded and, you know, when your business is growing, to go ahead and help those who unfortunately are not in the same spot as you are and may never be unless they're given help. So that was really encouraging to me. And, you know, a lot of the feedback is good, of course, and a lot of people were inspired to donate. And I think it is important to understand that, I mean, look at Tony Robbins as well. He was giving to Feeding America around the same time, and he was getting millions of meals from all of his fans. I mean, it's our duty as kind of, you know, alternative news, natural health, free thinking, you know, passionate people to do this. And I think it's a great message, and I'm glad that I did it, and I'm glad that we procured over 100,000 meals.
I certainly am too, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, as a voluntarist, I believe that government really has no place in our society, but the other side of just fighting against that government control and coercion is to wean ourselves as a society off of the suckling of the teat of government largesse, which they steal from everyone else at point of a gun, of course. So the other half of that is our obligation. It's not an obligation in the sense that some government figure is going to throw you in jail if you don't, but it is a moral responsibility that we have to give back some of the incredible rewards that we've received from the things that we've done in our life. And we, as a society, we should be judged by how we treat the lowliest among us and the people who are struggling to get by. So I am absolutely hats off to the effort that you've done and all the people who have taken that message and run with it, which I think is the other important part of it. And you'll be pleased to note that, in fact, you have inspired me to actually do something this year with regards to that idea of charitable, sort of public act of charity and getting the Corbett Report community behind it. So I'm going to have more details on that in CorbettReport.com in the months to come, but that has been inspired by this act of yours. And
well, thank
hopefully
you. Let me
other
know.
People
Maybe I'll match
with
it.
That as well.
I'm always interested. Let me know what it is. And just to support your previous point, I 100% agree. The welfare system obviously is creating reliant other individuals. And the problem with that, here's the bureaucracy of this. So I've talked to people on the street who are actually poor and can't afford food and have broken arms and legs and stuff. And some people have amputated legs or they have diabetes and they don't understand why they have it. And you could say, well, why aren't they on welfare? As I did. Why aren't you on welfare? And then they go through this process of the bureaucracy. Well, I go to the office, I try to get it. I need this form, and I'm a veteran. They won't give me that. And they say I already have healthcare, blah, blah, blah. I mean, there is a system where there are people looting the welfare system and destroying it, and I believe a large portion of that is actually the case, then there's another system where people actually need help and can't afford food and may actually starve and die in the United States of America that the bloated government system won't even help. So that is 100%, you're 100% accurate. I've spoken to the people on the ground. That is the case, and it's absurd and appalling.
It is absurd, it's unfortunate, and it only gets worse the more that we expect, oh, well, some government bureaucracy is going to come along to take care of these people. No, it is us. We are going to take care of each other. We are going to build the society we want to live in. We have to stop reacting and just expecting that some political savior is going to come along to save the day. We are the change. We will be the change. And speaking of change, thank you, Anthony Gucciardi, for putting these articles out and for getting us to think about these things, which are so important because, again, the other half of keeping our eye on what's going on in the outside world is actually making a change in that world. And perhaps that's the most important half of that equation. So thank you again for all the work you're doing at naturalsociety.com.
Thank you, James. I appreciate it. I encourage everyone to continue reading and checking out the Corbett Report. And let me know about that initiative you have coming up. I'm excited, and I'm very pleased that that inspired you. Thanks so much for having me on again, and I hope to see you again soon before another 3 years.
I hope so. Thank you. This video is brought to you by the subscribers of BoilingFrogsPost.com. For more information on this and other topics, please go to BoilingFrogsPost.com. For more information and commentary from James Corbett, please go to CorbettReport.com.